back. WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. I'm wearing my Chicken Palooza shirt here, giving some love to our friends at Royal Farms. You know, when you move out of the region and you winter down in Florida, you maybe they got chicken down there, but they don't have Royal Farms. We always appreciate all of our old friends for coming on. I remember this guy and I would sit in the press box back when I was a legitimate media member at Oriole Park at Camden Yards. Long time at the Washington Times. He now podcasts. You can find him out on Twitter. He's my Facebook friend. We welcome the big man, Tommy Lavero, back onto the program. There must be a disharmony down in the nation's capital for me to be reaching to you. Commanders. How about that? We've lived long enough to see this, Tom.
Well, you know, I mean, they could have been called a bag of crap for what the impact was. I mean, people are, and these are the fans of the team. They're looking for reasons to hate this team now, you know, and any name would not have been satisfactory. So because this team has garnered so much ill will among its fan base, it's so damaged that people were ready to pounce on the name and dismiss it. And they have. I mean, it's been, you know, there was a Washington Post poll that said most people either could care less about the name or hated it. But, you know, the organization, the Commanders dug their own grave with the way Dan Snyder has operated the franchise. And it's going to take a lot more than a change in brand in order to turn that around.
Tom, I've known you a long time. I mean, I know I knew you before the Ravens existed, and I have a friend in my life, and I'm not going to completely out him, although he does make great food in Little Italy, who's a Redskin fan, right? Or I shouldn't say that word, but he was a fan of the Washington football team during the Joe Gibbs era, like a lifer fan. I mean, he had seats in the old stadium. He was so happy to have the tickets. He got through the waiting list. He made the move into the new stadium and supported the Joe Gibbs 2.0 and all of that. And, you know, sometime around when the Ravens were winning the Super Bowl, maybe the second time, like somewhere between 2008, 9, 10, 11, this is a friend that went to every road game, you know, sat out on those bleachers in Phoenix back in the 90s, you know, all of that, and just passed and just said, you know what, it's not fun anymore. Driving down there's not fun. Tailgating's not fun. Going with people I go, not fun. I guess fast forward to me with the Orioles and what that experience is and where the Ravens are very much in transition as a fan base right now, where the old fans, my age, our kids don't want the tickets. They need to figure out who they're going to sell them to. Man, the Redskins forever felt like it was just built in, like it would always be great. Much like probably you and I sitting in Camden Yards back in the 90s thinking, how you go screw this up? How can you screw this up? And it really is. It's happened under our watch, right? Like it's happened while you're writing columns and on the radio in DC and I'm starting a website and having to come. It's amazing that these beloved franchises that you grew up covering, loving, have really become just a pariahs in their own community. It's unfathomable, really, how hard they had to work to be dicks for so long to screw this up the way they have.
Yeah, I mean, considering the historic legacy of the Orioles as a championship organization, and not just a championship organization, but for years, the organization that people felt did things the right way, you know, the so-called Oriole way, whatever that was, up and down from the front office down. And the Redskins were the same way, dating back to when Lombardi finally came to Washington, stopped the losing. George Allen took over and kept it going. And then Joe Gibbs took it to a whole another level. I mean, that's the hard part for the older fans to have lived through the glory years and know how good it can be and see how painful it is now. You know, I mean, the younger fans will say to them, well, at least you had those glory years. But, you know, I mean, those fans, they don't know what it was like. They don't know what Memorial Stadium was like in 1983 or anything like that, for Camden Yards, the first 6 or 7 years it was open, and it was filled up every night and such an electric place.
Filled up with people reading the Washington Times and the Washington Post and coming up here and utilizing making Baltimore their home team, right? Like that was just completely urinated upon by Angelos. And I see it a generation later now where kids in our community have lacrosse sticks, right? That's a different thing. But where Washington has its own baseball team that is far surpassed in championships, in fan base, in revenue, in respectability within their own marketplace. I mean, for the Redskins or Washington football team's damnation has been this rising thing for the Capitals and certainly for the Nationals, that there has been something else to latch on to. And we know how college sports is in both of our communities, but in your community specifically, the baseball team there is filled in very nicely for that Redskin money that the corporate people didn't want to give. The baseball team's done a good job down there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, a lot of times in business, and you know this, timing has a lot to do with everything. And both the Orioles and the Commanders picked a poor time to be such an abysmal franchises. You know, I mean, in Baltimore, let's face it, the glory days, we're talking about the Orioles, at least from 84 through, you know, through 97, there was no football team there. So they had it all to themselves pretty much. And in the waning days of the Colts was when the Orioles from 79 to 84 really made hay.
So did the Blast, now, by the way. You know what I mean? Like the Blast did well because that's absolutely. Our city was starved for that. I mean, Kenny Cooper back in the day, they Ed Hale, they traded off of that to say the Colts left you, but we're your team. And I guess to my point, there's a provincial part of this, right, that is old school now. I just sat out in L.A. in the upper deck smelling all the weed blowing around out there at the Super Bowl. And I thought these people have no provincial thought about sports, right? Like that the Rams are their community's team. I think the leagues have gone away from that. And in a large degree, just you're one franchise that comes in on the satellite dish and it doesn't really matter where you play. Like the Raiders, doesn't matter where they play.
Well, again, as far as the timing, this is like a generational thing right now. We're seeing a convergence of fantasy football, which has made, I think, has really lessened the idea that people root for teams instead of root for players. You have gambling, which is a whole new phenomenon that's going to change it. And you have a generation of young people in all franchises, even the good ones are struggling with this. You have, you know, a group of young people that don't really want to commit to basically being season ticket holders for an organization. That's not the way they live their lives. They wake up and they decide, what am I going to do tonight? You know, what are my friends going to do tonight? Oh, let's get some tickets and go see the game tonight, or let's not, you know? And so the idea of a season ticket base to build on, and I think throughout sports, is starting to become like an antiquated thing, dealing with a generation that it's not going to make the same kind of commitments to sports that their parents did.
Oh, and the same kind of commitment it would take to be a baseball fan for 162 nights for 6.5 months. Tom Lavero has been my friend for going on 3 decades now, a long time at the Washington Times, now sunning himself down in Florida and enjoying. I know one thing, it's not happening in Florida right now. They've sold all these communities on the spring training dream. Enjoy Sarasota, right? The baseball mess. Above and beyond, because the football thing takes care of itself. The product on the field's good. The CTE goes away. The racism goes away. The Colin Kaepernick blackballing. The throwing game. None of that matters when the Rams are playing the Bengals and it's fourth down in the fourth quarter, right? Like, the game is still good. Baseball's got, like, more problems than you and I have time, and you and I are probably of the generation of remembering, you know, when it was really something and the DH was controversial or whatever. After all these years and all the Lords of the Realm and the 81 strike that made my dad mad at the Sporting News and he canceled it, and the 94 strike that made me wonder whether I was going to be able to feed my kid in a baseball-only city, whatever lessons that are there as I get older, it's just follow the greed, right? I mean, there's just an immense amount of greed involved in the baseball side and a complete lack of self-awareness for where they are in the cosmos of life in America that I don't know that anybody's really all that upset that they're not playing or like really worries whether they come back. If they don't play this summer, I'll just go see McCartney and wait on Pearl Jam is what I'll do.
Well, and I wrote a column recently that talked about how the DH has been quietly agreed upon now to use in both leagues. And there wasn't like a blip. There was no outrage. I mean, there was a time in baseball where you picked your friends based on whether or not they supported the DH or not. Now, I think the passion is gone. I mean, I still think baseball is healthy as an entertainment event. They still drew 70 million fans in 2019 and 50 million to minor league baseball. So it's still relatively healthy as an event. But the passion that used to drive people, like you just said, I mean, if they don't play, okay, they don't play. If they play, let us know. You know, we'll spend a night at the ballpark. It is not the passionate sport that it used to be. Now, football still has for different reasons, like you said. So I think the passion for baseball has been greeted out of it by both sides. And part of the problem with the labor thing right now is you have two inept leaders in charge. Tony Clark is way over his skis as the head of the Major League Baseball Players Union. And Rob Manfred is a guy who lacks vision. You know, he was a nuts and bolts lawyer negotiator for the team for baseball for years, but he lacks a vision as to where he needs to take this game. So you've got two leaders on both sides who probably are ill-equipped to deal with the problems that they're facing right now.
You know, Tom, the thing that I'm having a hard time with, and my last name's Aparicio, right? And I've dedicated my life to doing this and having a sports radio station and being treated like shit by this clown that's owned the baseball team here for 30 years. You know, I'm okay, but everybody's been mistreated. And the notion that they're not going to play, or if they do play, they're going to lose 100 games. You talk about lack of vision. I wonder who loves baseball. You know, if John Angelos loved baseball, he'd be at baseball games more often. Like Rob Manfred, does he love baseball? Who loves baseball? Who? Bob Costas loved baseball, right? Like you and I loved baseball and we talked about it with love. I don't even sense that Christopher Mad Dog Russo loves baseball when he's spouting off about hardball. I like loving the game. The game's changed so much that it's unrecognizable with the shifts and the home runs and the strikeouts and striking outs. Okay. And we don't steal bases and we don't sacrifice and we don't have starting pitchers anymore. Like the Orioles think their grand idea is to dig up left field, right? Like that's their best idea is to make the, we'll get more pitching. No, you'll get more pitching if you pay pitchers is what you'll do. So I think the whole thing is a little bit of a gaslight to some degree. And when I go to the game now, I watch the actual game and I'm thinking, are any of you paying attention to how not entertaining this is? Are you that caught up in it that you can't see that this is not exciting?
Well, I think it speaks to, again, a bigger thing right now that we're experiencing that really speaks to social media and the fleeting notion of passion, period, in anything. I mean, the investment of passion and time into entertainment products, passes in the blink of an eye now. I mean, before, everything had slowed down. There was no 24-hour news cycle. I mean, when you and I worked at the newspaper, there was a deadline at the end of the day, and there was no more news until the paper came out the next day. So I think the idea of being passionately invested in not just sports, but music or anything anymore, entertainment, movies, television, it's too fleeting for people to get that emotionally invested. I think it's all a distraction. It's all entertainment value. It's all about fun in the moment, but
and it's amazing. The NFL still provides that almost universally, right?
Like, yes, it does.
And we can all look at the NBA, and you and I go back to the Big E and, you know, the Bullets and Wes Unseld. We can talk about Magic and Larry Bird, Michael. We can talk about all of that and say, is what they're doing now more entertaining than what we grew up on in any of the sport? God, don't start in the Olympics, right? I mean, I'm going to shine it on later on. He's been over in Beijing. I like the Olympics are a whole different, and the World Cup, the corruption that's involved in playing soccer in 120 degree heat in Qatar. All that aside, the NFL still does it. I'm trying to always put my hand on how that works. You know, that the NFL still gets the 2-minute warning, one score game, everybody wants to bet on it, everybody has a player, everybody has a team. That's really a magic that they should not take lightly. You know what I mean? Take my wallet lightly, because baseball had it at one point, the NBA had it at one point, horse racing had it. I mean, all these things had that heat at one point. Wrestling had it, right, for a period of time. Everybody's watching wrestling. But the NFL, I don't know where the bubble burst. I just came back from the Super Bowl. And all the rest of it feels even more diminished on its face, that when you put it on, you're like, you don't say this isn't as good as the NFL. You just say, this isn't baseball. I mean, the starting pitchers, you know, on a 25-pitch count, it's crazy.
Yeah, I know. I mean, they try as much as they can to wreck it. And look, let's say football is, I mean, one of the basic things about NFL football is it's only on, if you count the regular season, 17 games. I mean, you know, the fact that you know, the product is not as prevalent as the other ones makes it more valuable. I think that's why people care about it more.
It's a miniseries, not a soap opera. Like General Hospital, you had to watch every day, right? This is something that's it's Sopranos. It's a season episode, 17 yes. episodes, right?
Yeah, I mean, and for television, there's never been a sport, I think, made better for TV than football and the NFL. I have a theory, though. I want to bounce off you about baseball.
Okay. Let me see if I agree with your theory. I love your theories.
Okay, I hear all the time that baseball, you know, young people don't care about baseball, and that's true. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sure it's true that it's an old person sport. Okay. Well, what happens to young people at some point?
They get old.
Yeah. If baseball is an old person sport, then what are these young people going to do when they get old?
I come at it so differently, man. By the way, Tom Lavero's here. You can go read his work. He's a dear old friend of mine. You can catch him. You're still doing your podcast in D.C., right? A couple times a week?
I do a podcast with my old radio partner, Kevin Sheehan. The Kevin Sheehan Show, I'm on Tuesdays and Thursdays with him.
You mentioned, like, what makes a young person an old person and a sports fan. I still go back to this, and I'll hang on this, and maybe it's my Baltimore. It really is provincial. That's my town that won, right? Like, when the Bills win, everybody from Buffalo cries because it's about where they're from. For the franchises that matter, maybe not Green Bay, maybe not the Steelers or the Cowboys or the Raiders that have more of this global thing, but the feeling about winning, if you're from Cincinnati and the Bengals are there, that was always the root of all of it, because it said team, your city here, right? That, you know, whether it was the St. Louis Browns or the Baltimore Orioles, it was sold as, that's your team. That's your town's team. That's your town's pride. That's state you. And I guess that's where it started in the 50s with the Colts, the Orioles here, that sort of emulated whatever the Yankees represented in New York or whatever. And that's how the sports thing happened. I don't think young people see it that way at all. I often wonder, and I have a lot of friends, all white people, who have young white children and grandchildren who are named Brooks, and they love baseball, and they shove it down their kid's throat, and their kid plays baseball, and they're baseball, and that's fine. And I'm an Aparicio, so I get that. But I'm talking about regular people. I'm just talking about people that dad didn't make you go to the ballpark and you were spoon fed and played t-ball and all that, that you just discover sports along life's highway. Like my mother tried to get me into tap dancing and the French horn. You know what I mean? Things you would discover along the way. What would the appeal of baseball be versus a lacrosse stick versus a hockey stick versus a basketball or a soccer ball? And I think provincialism and growing up in a town with a baseball team that was provincial is what made me, it's still what holds it together for me. Cause I don't really care about, no offense to Trey Mancini or any of these guys, they're all disposable as they move on as human beings. So latching on to Brooks and Boog and Jim Palmer was a thing I had that was a gift to me, in the way that if you're from New York, you latched on to Mickey Mantle. If you're Washington, you latched on to the Hogs or whatever your thing was. But a lot of it was rooted in where you're from. That's gone, right? Like that's a busted model for why a kid who's 12 would love the Orioles, because they love Baltimore. Matter of fact, you grew up outside of Baltimore, your parents watch Fox 45 and tell you to hate the city, right? So like there's a little bit of that going on top of it. So I think the provincial part of loving a team when you grew up in Buffalo and taking that the rest of your life, I don't know that kids born in this century are ever going to have that, because I don't know that it's marketed that way.
I get that. You're right about that. That's part of the passion. But my experience is, as younger people get older, they become more passionate about where they live. It may not be where they grew up, but where they live all of a sudden matters to them more when they're 40 than it did when they're 25. And they start caring about their places they live a little bit more.
Well, that talks about the high school their kid goes to, the community they live in, the way they vote. You know,
those don't matter so much anymore. Everyone's so transient, you know? I think when these young people get older, the community where they live, that they want to adopt being part of that community wherever it is. So
the Rams are going to be a big deal at some point, right? Like literally, or Las Vegas, where when I went out for the Stanley Cup Finals, they had the greatest marketing scheme I've ever heard. We are the misfits. And everyone that lives in Las Vegas is a misfit that didn't fit in Detroit or Chicago, and they moved to Vegas. And that was like, I thought that was friggin' brilliant. You know what I mean? And look, when the Ravens started here and had that foundation, their foundation was, you know, we're not the Colts, we're not the Orioles, we're going to respect them. And the Nationals were birthed too, right? The Nationals, nobody was born with a Nationals hat on. They had to go out and earn every one of those crooked W's. It looks like a Walgreens logo, right? Literally.
Yeah, I get all that, and you're right about that. I just have a feeling that we're entering an age where sports, and I put the NFL, like you said, I put the NFL in its own category. You know, I mean, the NFL is basically like they said in the movie Concussion, Albert Brooks, the character he played. You know, the NFL owns Sunday. The Catholic Church used to own it. Now the NFL owns it. That's how big we're talking about. But as far as the other entertainment sports, I think that the community passion, I think, is transient and fleeting, just like these communities are. I think people move more. I think people, you know, and here's the problem with Washington, with the football team. Is people moving into the Washington area, at least in suburban Maryland, they look at Washington and the football team, the Commanders, they look up north at the Ravens and they say, well, what am I, an idiot? What team am I going to root for? Now that I'm here in town, I'm a resident of Prince George's County, who am I going to root for? They're going to root for the Ravens. So that's part of the problem that's going on with the Washington Commanders is they're not
the same problem with the Orioles, though, dude. Right? I mean, yes. The same problem with the Orioles was everybody who's over 30 had a Cal Ripken something something in their closet in Reston, Virginia, in Silver Spring, Chevy Chase, Alexandria, and that's over with now. They have their own thing. They have a Zimmerman thing now, or a Scherzer, whatever their thing is, right? Or Ovechkin. They have a different thing that'll never be an Oriole thing again, right? And I,
yeah, You're right.
The Washington Commanders, you talk about getting young people interested in that franchise. That's a whole different level of problem that I think Mr. Snyder has.
Yeah. Now, I'll give you an example about what I talk about with the Ravens. The number one selling jersey in the state of Virginia are Ravens jerseys, not Commanders jerseys, not Redskins jerseys, Ravens jerseys in the state of Virginia.
Well, see, this is why
I find it ludicrous that everyone thinks that the Commanders are going to build a stadium and play football in Virginia. Okay, if they do that, they might as well raise the white flag right outside the Potomac and say, Maryland, good DC, goodbye, Ravens, it's all yours. Because if they move over to Virginia, people are not going to make the drive over to watch this football team play wherever their stadium is in West Virginia or wherever they're talking about putting it, like they have for 75, 80 years in the other direction. They're not going to do that. People have been driving from Virginia to D.C. and Maryland to see this football team play for over 80 years. They're not going to reverse it. Not now. So if this football team builds a stadium in Virginia, I would expect the Ravens would plant their flag very strongly in Montgomery and PG County and the district.
Well, and Tom Lavero is here from the Washington. Last thing for you. You're always generous with your time. What's the end game with the Snyder thing? Like the cheerleaders, the emails, the league looking the other way, this sham of a second event. I mean, if the league's running the investigation, it's a sham. I mean, that's pretty obvious going back to the New England situation and just all the way through the line. I don't trust them. And certainly if Beth Wilkinson wasn't good enough, what's going to make this next thing good enough? The amount of protection they give each other and cover they give each other, nothing short of Congress is going to get at that because they're never going to self-police.
Well, you're right about that. Nothing. I have a column in today's Washington Times. You can read my column on Twitter, Tom Lavero, or on Facebook. I post or you go to WashingtonTimes.com, click on sports about this issue and about how Roger Goodell has surrounded himself with all these female lawyers. He keeps hiding. You know, here you have a league where all the owners pay off women to shut them up and to clean up the mess. He keeps hiring all these female lawyers to give the illusion that the NFL has some kind of inclusion about it. You're right. I mean, nothing short of Congress is going to have an impact on this. I think that's the long shot. The long shot idea is for people who want Dan Snyder out as owner, and that would pretty much mean almost every Washington Commanders fan, is that Congress holds hearings, public hearings, not Zoom hearings, but hearings where Dan Snyder and Roger Goodell have to show up before a committee and testify under oath. It's a long shot, but there's a feeling that if the NFL is dragged before Congress and having to testify because of Dan Snyder's sins, that could be the final straw to get rid of Dan Snyder. It's a long shot, but you're right. Congress is their only hope. And people say, you know, well, Congress doesn't have any business doing this. I might point out that it was the congressional hearings on steroids that resulted in the stricter testing in Major League Baseball. The players' union wanted nothing to do with strict testing until they started getting dragged on Capitol Hill and having to testify on the national spotlight. All of a sudden, the players' union changed their tune when it came to stricter testing when that happened. So Congress has every right to look into this. The NFL is a $20 billion unregulated business. I don't think there's any other business in the country that doesn't face some kind of regulations with that kind of revenue, but the NFL does. So Congress has every right to look into this.
Well, I mean, the blackballing of Kaepernick and the situation with black coaches and the situation with women and the situation with gambling, and they're all in right now, except when they're throwing football games. So to your point, if they own Sunday, they should be under the purview of the United States government, in my opinion. Yes, I mean, I agree with the way that they're running things at this point. They run the American flag on Sundays, that's for sure. Tommy Lavero is here. You can find him out on Twitter, out on Facebook, doing the podcast thing, and of course at the Washington Times and on my Facebook page, because I always show up and see him there. Enjoy yourself down in Florida. I have a feeling you're doing just fine without spring training baseball right now, right? You're going to make it through March without spring training baseball.
Yeah, I'll survive somehow. I'll find a way. Got a heated swimming pool right by the condo here, which is beachside. We'll do just fine.
You know, I've always wanted good things for you, so I'm cheering from up here. I'll join you in Florida later on in the month. I'm coming down for the owners' meetings down in Palm Beach next month, so I'll have my ears open for all things going on with my own franchise, let alone these other 31 partners in the National Football League. Appreciate you, Tom. It's always great to read your work, and I do appreciate the couple times a year we get together and hang out.
Thanks for having me, Nestor.
You got it, Tom Lavero joining us here from the Washington Times. We are all of us brought to you by our friends at Royal Farms, real fresh, real fast. Getting the mocha coffee going here, especially, man, we had some warm mornings here the last couple of days. I don't even need to heat up. I'm going to be ready for Chicken Palooza coming this summer. I got my Chicken Palooza shirt on. Big appreciation to our friends at Royal Farms, as well as our friends at Coons Ford, Security Boulevard, and the Maryland Lottery. We're getting the crab cake tour together. Lavero stuck down there in Florida where you can't order a decent crab cake. Come back up here to Maryland. Beginning on March 4th, we're going to be at Mama's on the Half Shell down in Canton, honoring Scunny, having a crab cake, probably some oysters before it's all over, maybe even a beer. That's March 4th, and the crab cake tour begins then. We're getting it back out on the road, letting ourselves play with the Maryland Lottery. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. Baltimore, positive, even with the Washington friends we have.